When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Everyone Talks to Liz. Big news. It's not great. Big news from Tesla. And you'll understand why I'm telling you this. Tesla laid off 10% of their global workforce, effective immediately. Now, at the end of last year, because I want you to understand the numbers, Tesla said it had 140,000 employees worldwide. So you do the math, right? Thousands of people finding themselves without work. As shocked as they must feel. I mean, it's horrible, right? You know what's more shocking? Not when you're laid off, when you are fired. Not just, oh, growth and sales have slowed. We need to slim down the company. It's you did something we don't like. You're done. Today is a masterclass in what to do when that happens. So many people fear the unknown. They're caught up in the emotion of the moment. They're frozen. They can't do anything, right? But very often, getting fired is sometimes the best time to completely pivot, take a flying leap, and change careers. That is exactly what my guest today faced when, at 26 years old, he was canned from a job he thought he was perfectly suited for. Now, okay, timing is never good for this, but the timing for him was atrocious. He had just recently married, had two tiny kids at home, and suddenly no income. While he was frozen and freaking out, because this happened to me too, his wife said, time for you to take a flying leap and change careers. Well, folks, had he not been forced to leave his career in the textile industry, he would not be the rock star in luxury real estate that he is today, building a massive empire that, at last check, has sold $72 billion in properties, and he is now the star of his own Netflix show, Buying Beverly Hills. Mauricio Umansky, founder of the agency. Welcome to Everyone Talks to Liz.
Thank you so much, Liz. What a beautiful introduction, and I'm really excited to talk to Liz.
Well, that introduction, it's really all you. It's your life. It's what happened to you. I mean, to me, it's so dramatic, but I mean, it feels like it's in the rearview mirror now for you, I'm sure. But when I bring up that moment when you were fired, did I get that right? It's like shocking. You're frozen. You're flipping out of your mind.
Oh, it was so scary. It was one of the scariest moments of my life. I thought that, I was a young father. I was a young husband. I had two young children that I had to take care of. And I wasn't 100% sure that I was going to be able to take care of them. And it was right before Christmas time when this happened, and I was heading, home. I didn't even want to go home. I didn't want to drive home. I didn't want to face my wife. I didn't want to face, reality. I drove around Los Angeles. I just kept driving in circles, bawling, crying, thinking, trying to figure out how I was going to break the news, what Christmas was going to look like, what was next in my world. At the moment, I just thought it was the end of the world, and it was just completely a devastating moment.
Oh, I can only imagine. And I don't have to imagine. Same thing happened to me. And it is a shock. I really didn't expect it. But I was fired. Well, they call it non-renewal of contract in television. But I was a reporter and anchor in Columbus, Ohio, and I'd been there for 3.5 years. I thought I was super popular. No, it happens. But tell us what you were doing when you got fired, because you were in the textile industry, in the fashion world, correct?
So kind of a funny story there. That was I was in the textile business. I moved from the textile business into fashion, which is one thing is selling just straight up fabric and piece goods. And then the next thing is actually designing a fashion clothing line and merchandising it and selling it all over the world. And I did that, and I did that very successfully. And then I just couldn't produce the goods. You know, I mean, I was able to sell that the brand was the Malibu zip code 90265. And it was a brand that we were able to sell all over the country and all over the world. We grew it to $30 million in sales very fast. I've always been good at selling, I couldn't produce the goods, and I just couldn't ship them. So I ended up having to sell the brand, kind of, you know, go bankrupt. And then there was another clothing line, fashion line in Los Angeles, a brand called Carol Little, which was the largest employer of people in Los Angeles at the time and the largest fashion brand at the time. And they were having some issues also. You know, it was a recession. It was 1995, and, you know, we were having that 95 recession, which was terrible. And they were having some issues, and they wanted to fix them. And they thought that in order to fix it, that they would, you know, knock off my clothing line. And so they hired me to knock off 90265 and start, you know, a division at their company. And I did. And that did not, you know, it did not go so well, just because of, again, the recession and what the issues that they were having, et cetera, et cetera. And so they came to me and they just said, listen, we got it. We have to close the division. You know, we're going to close it down. We're, you know, we can't continue to exist. Keep in mind, they wanted me to, you know, knock off my own line, which was all cotton knits, for anybody that understands, with cotton wovens. And it's pretty much impossible to knock off, you know, and have different fabrics and actually knock off your line. Like, it just doesn't happen. But funny story, cutting all of that forward, is that the person that let me go and fired me, 15 years later, 20 years later, came and asked me for a job. And I gave them a job. I actually paid it forward. I didn't care. I actually gave them a job. They worked for me in my company here at the agency. And wow. I did not hold back. I did not hold, you know, anger or any resentment. On the contrary, I felt honored that I was asked for that. And so it was kind of cool.
I'm such a brat. I would be like, yeah, look at you now. You need my help. You are not going to believe this. I still have a 90265 sweatshirt.
No way. I love that.
The Malibu zip code. Absolutely. I still have it. I'm never getting rid of that thing. It's because.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
They were great.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're crying. You're driving around. You get home. What happens?
Yeah, get home. I didn't even have to talk. Kyle just saw it in my face. She saw what was going on, and she knew immediately that, you know, I was fired. I didn't even have to say it. Like, she just knew it. And she was super supportive. She was amazing. You know, just made me feel great about myself, picked me right back up, made me feel great about us and the fact that we would survive and that we would be good together and that we would make it happen, and just could not have been, you know, more supportive, better. And she said, listen, like, this is the time that you've been waiting for. Like, this door and this opportunity just closed, but now is the opportunity for you to do what you've been wanting to do, which is change industries, get into something else. You've always loved this real estate world. Like, take advantage of it. Like, let's go do that. And she gave me total support. We went to go, you know, get our real estate licenses together on our date night. she never used it. She never used her license, but she got it. And we did that. And that was our big date night. We would eat out of the vending machine at school. that was like our dinner. And we just made it happen.
As you were going through that, I'm sure you had to cut your spending. You had to really be fleet of foot when it came to saving money, or at least not spending it. That's got to be scary.
Well, all of it's scary. Yeah. And, you know, thank God, you know, we reached out to, you know, we had family that was able to, you know, help. And so, you know, like, you know, between my grandfather, my parents, her mom, you know, a couple of different people, everybody pitched in, right? And just kind of helped us get through a period of time. But yeah, we had to cut back everything. We had to cut back expenses. We had to cut, to bare minimums, and difficult decisions, and what you don't have and what you don't, what you do have. And, just like everybody that has ever gone through a struggle, there are very difficult decisions that you have to make, that you have to, decide, on what you're going to spend on and what you're going to have and what goods you, are necessities and what goods are luxuries.
And just because you get your real estate license, then you have to make a name for yourself.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we're going to be right back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Klayman. Just go to Indeed.com/Klayman right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Klayman. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So talk about how you began doing that and your first sale of a home.
Yeah, so I went to go, I got my real estate license and I went to go work. And again, it was still in the recession. It was 1995, 1996. So we were still at the end of that recession, but still in it. And I just started to call everybody. I had a lot of clients from the clothing business. I had a lot of friends. And I just started to call everybody. And I got two deals early, one of them from my doctor, who gave me an opportunity to sell his house. And another one from, believe it or not, from, my stepdaughter's father, Kyle's ex-husband. And so they both gave me an opportunity. I was successful to sell both of those homes during a recession. I sold them quickly and at very good numbers. I used those to start advertising and marketing, myself. And I remember at the end of that year, I had a very successful year. I ended up in my first year, making $183,000. I remember the number perfectly, and which was pretty good. Yeah. I had to pay taxes on $183,000, and today's tax day. So I remember perfectly. It wasn't easy to pay those taxes, I can tell you that. But I made one promise to myself, and I made a promise that I would never have a lesser previous year moving forward. And I ended up keeping that promise in real estate as a salesperson. And I kept that promise, for 20 years up until I started the agency. And prior to starting the agency, I ended up, I achieved the success of, being the number three real estate agent in the country, number one in California. So I literally just every single year, no matter what my year was, I just surpassed it the next year and I surpassed it the next year. When I started the agency, the year I founded the agency, which was 2011, was the first year that I went backwards just because I had too much going on. But 2012, we got it right back on.
you got to spend before you can then start hauling it in. But I have to ask, because I read somewhere that you were the real estate agent for the sale of the Playboy Mansion in, oh my God, really?
Yeah, that was so much fun. I was able to achieve that listing and I was called in for an RFP on it and to get the listing. And I decided that I wasn't just going to tell them what I was going to do because I really wanted this listing. I actually did and everything and showed up with everything I was going to do for the property. A video, a brochure, a book, all the content. I actually had everything in already done. And I was like if I had the listing already, right? So I didn't go get the listing. I arrived saying, here's the listing. Here's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right. And so I just manifested, you know, getting it. And I ended up getting the listing.
How many times did you show up selling the Playboy Mansion? I mean, how many rooms is it? I'm sure you've committed all of this to memory. But and what's the selling point for people who might be a little squeamish, like, wait, Hefner was in here, you know, in his silk pajamas having screenings? I was invited once to the Playboy Mansion for a movie screening, and it was pretty wild, I must say.
Well, it's ground zero of Holmby Hills, right? I mean, it's 5.5 acres, the most beautiful, you know, grounds. And they've got, I don't know if you remember it, but they have a zoo and they have almost a microclimate of one of the most amazing sequoias, redwoods in the country. And so when you walked in there, there was a whole microclimate. So you're literally talking about ground zero. The Playboy Mansion itself was kind of old. And whoever was buying it was going to have to, you know, really do a major remodel. But obviously you have, you know, the pool and the grotto. And I mean, you're talking about ground zero there. And you know, the Playboy Mansion is probably one of the most famous homes in the world, right? I mean, what do we have? We have Graceland, we have the White House, and we have the Playboy Mansion. Like,
And how much did it go for?
So it was $100 million, and it was the first $100 million sale in Los Angeles at the time.
Can you say who bought it? I should know that.
I am not allowed to say who bought it, even though it's been out now many, many times. But yeah, it won't be hard.
The reason you're so successful, because you are discreet, correct? Don't you have to be that plus everything else?
Well, you know, there's a saying that I live by, which is, you know, do you know how a fish gets caught? By its mouth. Keep your mouth shut.
Okay.
So discretion in the high end, in the ultra high luxury world is so important. And, you know, people just love to show off about what they do and they end up talking. And it all that does is end up costing them later on down the road. And, you know, being able to keep your mouth shut and having that discretion is hard. Because, you know, some of these things are fun and they're exciting and they're big numbers. And so it's hard to keep your mouth shut. But at the end of the day, you know, if you want to keep a good reputation, you got to keep, you know, you got to have that discretion.
And in Los Angeles, everybody wants to name drop. And it must be hard because you want to be able to tell a prospective client, I just sold this billionaire this property, but I'm sure that it all comes back in the right way when you are discreet. I want to go back to starting the agency. That is a very hard thing to do. It's hard to start printing your own stationery. There's a great book that I just read about the founding of CAA, Creative Artists Agency, where a bunch of these guys left William Morris, the long established, you know, talent agency, and started their own. They had their wives sitting on orange crates, typing and answering the phones, and they would have to go to Staples to get their own stationery. It's not easy. Tell me about some of the hard, difficult moments in the beginning.
Well, we started the agency with our own money. We did not go out and raise, you know, a ton of money. So when you start something, you know, or, you know, like that, that just has organic growth, and it's your own money at risk and all of that stuff, it's hard, and you've got limited budgets and you've got limited access to capital. So, you know, we did, you know, what you're saying, exactly what CAA did, and I need to go read that book. I'm going to buy it right now. But we did exactly what you just said, which is, you know, we had a little tiny office above an Indian restaurant, which smelled like Indian food. it was in Beverly Hills, which was good. But we had rented furniture. We had plastic chairs. We had plastic desks. You know, we were doing every single job. I was the valet parker. We had tandem parking, and I was recruiting agents. And you know, I promised them that, you know, if they ever needed to leave, that I'd get the car behind them out fast. So I was literally, you know, anytime somebody, I would watch somebody leave, I would drop my phone. I would run to the back. I would grab the keys. I would valet park and get them out. You know, you know, Billy and I were doing our own work. I mean, we changed the toilet seat in the bathroom in order to get a new toilet seat. We didn't go hire a plumber. Like, I mean, we literally did everything you're talking about, which is just being scrappy and getting things done.
We want our listeners to
I mean, it was, it takes, you know, 16-hour work weeks, right? Work days, right? I mean, it was intense.
I want our listeners to know something. You grew it from that one office above the Indian restaurant to now over 100 offices, 2,000 plus agents across 10 countries, and not just Canada and the U.S. You're in the Caribbean. You're in Central America. You're in Europe. You went to a franchise model, correct?
Yes, we are currently on a franchise model, which is really exciting. And the way we deal with franchises is different than all of our competitors. So I actually consider, I don't even like the word franchise. I feel like that's that talks. So we call everybody global partners. Because again, the partnership is about the collaboration, the global collaboration. You know, we developed what I call business in the cloud, which is basically delivering all of our systems, all of our marketing, all of our CRM, all of that stuff in the cloud. Instead of a business in a box, it's business in the cloud. But to me, the most important thing about this is the ability. I believe that real estate is a local business. Okay, it has to happen locally. And I tried opening up offices that were outside of our jurisdiction, and I just didn't like that. And that, so therefore, I really decided just to go more locally and to find local partners. And that's why we decided to go with the global partners model versus the corporate-owned model.
And you also have your global partners, let's call them that, really bring in sort of emerging cities and emerging areas that people are moving to. Can you give me an example here in the U.S. of an emerging and growing city?
Well, Portugal, Lisbon is just growing and has been growing like crazy. And people moving from the U.S. and a lot of people moving from California over there, but from California, from Florida, from all the East Coast, is just an incredible emerging city. We've got places where people are retiring, like San Miguel de Allende in Mexico, that we just opened up, which is also, you know, really cool and exciting. But even in the U.S. itself, you know, in order to find places that have, you know, lifestyle and more affordability, places like Denver, South Coastal Virginia, Charlotte, North Carolina, just a lot of that stuff that's happening is has just been you know, part of that whole emerging city in the U.S. itself. Nashville, you know, so we're seeing a lot of movement happening there. A lot of political issues in California, as we all know, and so we're seeing a lot of people move to Texas, to Florida. I don't know if those are emerging cities, but the other ones that I mentioned are more emerging. Yeah.
Well, sure, but you're smart to bring in partners who understand, whether it's Boise, Idaho, better than you would, or some other city.
100%.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we're going to be right back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/claimin. Just go to Indeed.com/claimin right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/claimin. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
People who were listening, I hope you just caught his accent when he mentioned in Spanish that city, perfect Spanish accent. You actually emigrated from Mexico when you were 6 years old to the United States. I want people to understand this because that in and of itself is a very challenging thing to do. Your parents and your ancestors had fled the Holocaust, correct, from Eastern Europe, and they somehow made it to Mexico. What did you understand as you were growing up about the sacrifices and the fear that they made and must have felt?
Yeah, well, we all know the immigrant mentality is very difficult, right? And it's all about working and all sticking together and all that stuff. I mean, my grandfather, when he arrived into Mexico, he got into the textile business, but the way he got into the textile business was he was a boxer. And so what he had to do is he actually would get into a ring with boxers. And if he, you know, if he survived one round, you know, they'd give him 100 pesos. If he survived two rounds, they'd give him 200 pesos, right? And he would take those 200 or 300 pesos and fabric and then go resell it and all that stuff. So he was a real entrepreneur. And he was just a great, great inspiration to me in terms of, you know, the mentality of hard work, saving, giving back. He was a man that gave back so much to people all over the world, in his world, helped you know, people that worked for him start, you know, their own businesses. And he was just a man that just gave back a lot, which to me is super important because giving back is just everything. But yeah, then we moved from Mexico to Los Angeles. Obviously, you have to learn a new language when you do
so
that.
You were Spanish speaking in your house? Any other language?
Yeah, that was it.
Oh my goodness,
just Spanish. Yeah.
And you came as a 6-year-old, and you had to learn English. You had to go to English speaking schools. How hard was that?
You know, when you're young, it's a little bit easier than when you're older, obviously. So it's kind of nice to be young going through that. You know, you just learn things faster. You learn the language faster. You get through it all. You know, to be honest with you, when I came here, I had just been, you know, cured from a terminal blood disease, which I'm sure you read in my, you know, book and looked at that. And so, you know, you go back to, you know, so when I came here, I just felt like, you know, all of a sudden I was like the luckiest man in the world, right? I didn't have to go to the hospital anymore. I mean, I was going to the hospital once a week, twice a week, you know, to take care of my disease. I was lucky enough to get cured and, you know, that was just like a gift of life. Right. And, but sometimes when doors open, you know, the big question, you know, just like you started the show today, you know, I got fired, you know, going into Christmas. And this door closed, right? And when this door closed, you know, the big question is, there's another door open. And us as humans and us as people that want to move forward, do we take advantage of those doors that are open? And do we walk in and actually step into that next room, into the next door, into the next adventure, right? And try to do something with it? Or do we get scared and stay stale and stay stagnant and not do anything? Right. And so when you talk about being an immigrant moving from Mexico, it's kind of a very similar analogy, you know, to that, right? Like, okay, we've moved, we're here, like, let's move forward, let's do things, let's create. Like, you can't stop, you can't be scared. That fear, and one of the things that's super important to me that I deal with right now is the Mexicans and the Latin immigration in the United States, I feel like has that mentality of stopping and not moving forward. And there's really no advocates and nobody out there speaking on behalf of them and motivating them, you know, to do amazing things because they are amazing people. I mean, and so, you know, from my perspective, if I can just be a little bit of a motivator to that, you know, to that group, it would be amazing.
That is an extraordinarily important point that you make. If you look at the news, you got to have borders. We understand that. And things are just disastrous down there. But the migrants are not horrible people. I remember once the boss at Fox News said, you know what? I would do the same. I'd do whatever I could to bring my family to America, even if it meant climbing over razor wire. And these people want to work. I grew up in L.A. They want to work. They're, on balance, wonderful people. And I just think that this country has to figure out the answer to that huge question of making them taxpaying Americans. I mean, why not, right? It's their jobs that need to be filled.
And let me tell you something. There's a lot of people that want to do those jobs.
Yeah, a lot of American-born people.
A lot of American-born people that would not do those jobs.
Well, I just, you have a perfect perspective on all of that. Let's get to television, Mauricio.
All right.
How did that TV gig come about?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, you know, this all started, this whole journey of television started with The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills 11, 12 years ago. I don't even know how many seasons we're on, maybe 13 seasons now. I'm not 100% sure anymore. But it certainly started from back then. And, you know, I've been wanting to do a real estate show for a while. And something, you know, that I think that could be, that was a show that was not only entertaining from the perspective of beautiful real estate porn, but it was also fun to like, it was also, had some teaching moments, and that people would actually learn from. I wanted it to just be more than just an entertaining show, but something that was also an educational show. So in every episode, if you notice on Buying Beverly Hills, we hope that there's just that little moment that you learn, you take something away from that episode that just gives you a little lesson, whether it's an entrepreneur or whether it's being a father or relationships between two people or anything like that. But we always try to include some sort of little teaching, you know, educational moment that somebody can learn from. But I was working so hard on doing this show. I cannot tell you how many years it took to actually get this thing on air. And I was offered by multiple networks to accept the show over the years. And I kept rejecting and saying no and no and no. I really wanted it to be on an important network. And when Netflix finally said yes and they wanted it, I mean, I could not have asked for a bigger, better international partner. They're fantastic to work with. But it took a lot of resilience of saying no. And it took a lot of resilience of just continuing to push. It didn't happen just like magically. I mean, we worked really, really hard to get it on the air and ultimately found Netflix and could not have been, you know, happier.
How do you work out the scheduling? I mean, you are trying to run a real estate business. You're trying to sell big properties. You have a lot of clients who want you at their beck and call. And then you've got a shooting schedule. How do you do that?
Well, you need a great team behind you. Okay. I mean, I've got an amazing team, starting with my right-hand person and my executive assistant, Jane. And then I've got, you know, my family and my, you know, my daughters and just a great team around me, you know, as well as at the agency. There was a great client of mine, very well-known businessman in Los Angeles that said to me, you know, when I started the agency, he said, hire great people and don't be afraid to pay for them. Okay.
Oh, and I like that.
And I did. And I can tell you again, just personally around me, I have an amazing team, but at the agency, I have an extraordinary team. The company, you know, is run by a woman president. Her name is Rainey Hake Austin. She's amazing. I say that to women because I actually love that she's a woman that's running the company. There's just not enough, you know, real estate. There's like 65% women in as agents, or 65, or even maybe a little bit more, maybe 68%. But yet all of the executives in real estate, you know, like 80% are men, or 85% are men. So from my perspective, to be able to have found Rainey to run the company, and how smart she is and how incredible she is, she was the best person for the job. The fact that she was a woman was a bonus for me, but she was 100% the best person for the job. And so you have to surround yourself with amazing people. And now, Liz, I'm a maniac. I've decided to take on more businesses. I mean, I've started the American Real Estate Association, you know, to create an alternative trade organization for the National Association of Realtors, which, as you know, that's in the news a lot right now. So I decided to take that on. I'm working on a technology solution that I can't tell you what it is right now, but that will redefine what's happening in real estate as a whole, as an entire ecosystem. So not just for the agency, but I'm about to launch that brand. And that'll be probably, you know, I'll start announcing that probably in the next 30 days or so. So I'm just a maniac, and I just love creating and doing, you know, fun things. It's what keeps me happy. But the only way you can do that is by surrounding yourself with a lot of great people, and allowing them to do what they're great at. And then that way they allow me to do what I'm great at, instead of me, you know, changing toilet seats in the,
You can always say you did that when you were on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Was it ever intrusive, or to the point where you thought, maybe this isn't such a good idea? I mean, we've got family issues. I mean, the kids get upset. They don't always want a camera in their faces. Like, do you regret any of that?
Many times, many times. It's very, very difficult. It's a huge sacrifice to be on a reality television show. It's a sacrifice from being able to live confidentially, being able to live a private life, you know, being, and then all the stuff that gets out there, you know, it's some truth, some accuracies, a lot of inaccuracies, a lot of not truths, a lot of people just making, you know, a bunch of speculation and, mm-hmm. and you put yourself out there and you've got to live with the good and the bad, because, you know, I've learned that once you start defending, you know, perhaps a statement that is not true, and it just becomes bigger news and more news. And it's sometimes you just have to look the other way, develop a thick skin and just be okay with it. At the end of the day, Liz, I think that, you know, the way I look at it is I've got to live a life that I'm proud of. I've got to make sure that I don't do anything that I'm not proud of. And everybody that's around me and knows my reputation, you know, knows, you know, who I am. All of that, you know, extra noise and speculation is just part of life when you're in that. And so, but there's no question, it's huge. It's a huge sacrifice to do this.
So much.
But by the way, same token, but by the same token, a great, form, you know, again, you know, I didn't have any money when I started all of this. I didn't have, you know, budgets to do all of these things. So being totally transparent and honest, it also is a great marketing tool. It has helped us grow the agency, and it has helped us, you know, develop put me in a position today, where because of that, I have the opportunity to start doing some of these things, like creating the American Real Estate Association, you know, and having a voice, you know, in that, like creating, you know, this technology company and having a voice in that. So all of these things that, you know, that I've done, although some of them have sacrifices and some of them are not great, all come together to culminate to create who I am and now be able to do the stuff that I do.
Well, sure. And it's also name recognition, the marketing, all that. Let's go back to the big pivot moment. It was your wife, Kyle, who was so supportive at the time and said, let's go get our real estate licenses. You know, there's so much, and I don't even like, there's so much talk about, oh, are they divorced? Are they not? But what it feels like you have done for the family is have a very strong and rational relationship so that the kids and you can forge ahead. Am I right in that?
100%. I mean, I can tell you with everything that Kyle and I are going through right now, and, you know, again, the speculation of what's going to happen with our life, we're still great friends. We talk every single day. We've talked today 3 times. We are going through our issues. But we're totally open and transparent with everybody. The kids know everything. I speak to them. They're my best friends. They work with me. Kyle's best friends with them. You know, and we're just very, very, you know, we've taken, again, what has been kind of difficult, and it's actually made us all even a little bit closer from the perspective of just being totally raw and totally transparent in our communication, that sometimes it's hard to deal with. But, you know, at this point, the only way to deal with that is by just being totally raw and transparent and just being straight up. And it just makes it a lot, even though there's hard conversations, hard statements, it makes it a lot easier in for us to be able to deal with it as a family and to be dealing with all of these things as a family. And at the end of the day, we don't care what's out there in the news. We know where we're at and what we're doing and what's going on. And all of that other, you know, speculation is just speculation.
Let's leave our listeners with a gift. Tell me how to negotiate if you're wanting to buy a house and you need the seller to come down in price, because there's so many homeowners or people who are dying to be homeowners who can't afford the actual so-called sticker price or what's out there on Zillow, who knows, but they want a house. How do you get a seller and a buyer together to meet somewhere in the middle?
So I'm going to give you my true and honest advice, and it has nothing to do with being self-servient, but at the end of the day, you need to have a really great real estate agent on your behalf, acting on your behalf. And I'm not talking about a real estate agent. I'm talking about a really great real estate agent, because unfortunately, and one of the things I'm doing at the American Real Estate Association is I'm trying to make licensing a lot more difficult. I actually want there to be less real estate agents and have better advisors out there, because there's actually a lot of them that are not good, unfortunately. And that's one of the things that I want to fix in my industry, because I love my industry so much. But just to be honest with you, you know, the ability, if you try to do it yourself, it's very difficult. I have seen so many people go out and hire discount brokers. They get destroyed by the good real estate agents. They never, you know, have the facts right. They never have, you know, the inspections correct in order to get the best deal. They don't have the relationships with the bankers and mortgage bankers to get their best mortgage rates, to get the best possible, you know, deal. And all of that at the end of the day comes into place. So, again, not being self-servient at all, but at the end of the day, I think it's about, you know, really hiring a great real estate agent, not just a real estate agent.
I will second that, because when I bought my first starter home, it was the real estate agent who really brought the two sides together. And when you're both a little annoyed, that kind of works, where, you know, the seller didn't get exactly what he or she wanted and the buyer had to come up a little. But it was our second house where I used the same, the seller and the buyer, same real estate guy. And he basically slapped us both upside the head and said, you got to be realistic. And we ended up getting a great deal. So I think that it would not have happened. I wouldn't have known how to do it myself. But that is strong advice. Mauricio, thank you.
Liz, a good deal happens.
How to do it. Yeah.
Liz, a good deal happens. I'm going to leave you with this. A good deal happens when both sides feel like they got screwed a little bit.
That's exactly, yeah. Well, I said annoyed. Okay.
There you go.
I thank you, Mauricio. It is a pleasure to speak with you and to hear your story, which I have no doubt has given people the courage or the strength after they've been canned or want to make a change in their life. So big thank you to you.
Thank you for your time.
Good luck. And to all of our listeners, I mean, come on, look what he went through. Look what he's been through. Look at the courage that he had to muster. You know what? I like that he said he was zooming around Los Angeles crying, because when I got canned, I was crying. And my mother basically said, okay, you get 24 hours, darling, to cry, and then it's done and you need to move forward and figure something out. And it's true. Allow yourself a little bit of fear and then cut it off and get going. Because when the going gets tough, the tough act like Mauricio and they get going. So thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. You know, I just adore you guys so much. I would reach out through the airwaves and hug each and every one of you, because we are successful because of you. I'll see you Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Claiming Countdown.
Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.